What did you really like about him? What's one or two things that you really liked about Oral Roberts?
He was gutsy and focused, and he was the most focused, ambitious, as I called it. That's where I got the term ambitious man I'd ever been around. He had a remarkable ego, and that is part of the component of anybody achieving anything on this planet. He was so resolute, and he didn't take no for an answer. And I liked the way he articulated his words. He spoke with such confidence and authority. I've learned so much from him. He filled the room. Any room he would walk in, I don't care how big it was, if he was there, everybody knew it.
Yeah.
And he wanted it that way, I think.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, he did. Did you agree with his method of raising money, the 900-foot Jesus and all those things that were going on? And then one time he said if he didn't raise a certain amount, he'd be taken.
Yeah.
And I interviewed him, and I didn't really clarify that, if he meant death or if he'd be transfigured or not.
He meant death. The 900-foot Jesus thing was very common. That kind of quote-unquote revelation or vision was common among Pentecostals because we were extravagant people in our imaginations and our superstitions. We believed in angels and demons and manifestations and dreams and visions and based on the Elijahs of the scripture and all the dramatics of the biblical narrative. So we didn't think anything of it. Neither did his partners. He's actually, Oral had in his mind, there's a famous picture of Jesus with his arms around the United Nations building. I'm sure you remember.
Yes.
That famous.
Yep.
That's what he had in mind. He saw that, and it would trigger that same strength in our minds. That was a very American patriotic thought. His partners gave a lot of money because of that. The secular media saw it differently as a manipulative thing, and it was. He was a master manipulator. To do that kind of ministry and to raise that kind of money to build a university and a hospital, if you can't manipulate a crowd, you don't belong in the pulpit. You know, if you can't convince, manus is the Latin word for hand, if you can't handle the crowd and convince them or persuade them to believe what you're teaching, whether it's for a tumor to disappear or for a hospital room or dorm room to be built, then you don't belong in that field. So very unapologetically, he did it. We discussed it. I was actually sitting next to him in the prayer tower the day that he was presenting this thing about needing the money. And he was going to address Jimmy Swaggart, and I asked him not to, and to talk about Jim Baker, because those two scandals occurred back to back. I said, we don't know enough about this, sir. I'd rather you not talk about it. I wasn't going to be there. I was leaving town. He decides to go into the prayer tower and present this to the country. And he said, Carl, are you in town on Monday? I said, no, actually, I'm leaving town, sir. What time? Early. It wasn't really early, but because he was going to be in there at 9 o'clock. He wanted me there. And I thought, Jesus, I don't want to see that, because that Peter Jennings, Tim Brokaw, these guys are going to be watching him.
Okay, and what was it he was going to talk about?
He was going to raise the $11 million. We needed $11 million. We needed $9 million, I think, or something like that.
Well, why did they all come to watch this if he was making a pitch for money? Why did the...
We were going to buy prime time and make this pitch. That's the day the guy that had brought $1.6 million or something, the dog racing guy from Florida. I remember when he walked in the room. Oral was nervous. He didn't know if the man was honest, if the check was good. Yeah. We knew nothing about him, but we needed the money. And he was doubting us to whether he was even going to take it. But I came late because if I came late, I'd never be seen on camera. I'd have to sit on the edge. He saved me a spot right next to him. When I walked to the room, come on, I sat right next to him, right in front of the camera.
Okay, why was it so important to have you there?
Because I'm black.
So did you feel used?
Yes, but I wanted to be used. I had told him, he had said to me in 1974, 25% of my income is from black people, he would say. Richard has the indispensable name of Roberts. He is my biological son. I need a spiritual son, and I need a black one, and that's you.
So he adopted you as his son?
That day. Kathy Lee Gifford and I were quitting that same day. She was going to go to Hollywood. In fact, I drove her to the airport to catch her flight to go out to L.A. But I was going to leave the group too, because Richard and I never really got along. I love him like a brother, but we were always rivals. unspoken rivals. And so I decided to leave. And then Earl called me and he didn't want me to leave. And that's when he said, I need the black sign and you need to stay here.
So then, all right. So then you understood his method of raising money and all, and bought into it as well, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As a president of a university, he told me this was because they wanted me to succeed him. I didn't have my degree. He said, son, did Eisenhower have a degree when he was president of Columbia? I said, I don't know. He said, well, he didn't. He said, a president has to be able to set policy and raise money. I was already on the Board of Regents. He said, you can do that. I've seen you raise money. You have to raise money. I said, yes, sir.
But he wanted you to be the president.
Well, he said, profoundly, he said that to a lot of other guys too, but he said, I want to get 10 years on you. I was 25. He said, I want to get 10 years on you when you're about 35. Get a little bit more experience under your belt, and I'll help you. I want you to be president in case Richard doesn't make it. Okay. And he said, I want you on one end and Billy Joe Daugherty on the other, Larry Lee and Benny Hinn over here. And y'all, I said, we got him covered. We'll take care of him.